The play Breaking the Code tells the story of computer genius Alan Turing. The play is being staged by Performing Arts of Woodstock for a three-week run beginning November 3rd. It is only a slight exaggeration to say that the British mathematician Alan Turing saved the Allies from the Nazis and invented the computer and artificial intelligence all before his suicide at the age of 41. Breaking the Code tells how Turing's revolutionary ideas laid the foundation for the modern computer and how he took a leading role in breaking the German Enigma ciphers during World War II, a scientific triumph that was critical to Allied victory. This is also the tragic account of a man who, despite his wartime service, was arrested and forced to undergo cruel and humiliating chemical castration, all for trying to live honestly in a society that defined homosexuality as a criminal offense. The play is directed by Betty Seiler and Wallace Norman, and it's a great pleasure to welcome our good buddy Wallace Norman back to the program. How are you?
I am reasonably well. Thank you very much for having us here.
Well, it seems like it's been a long time since you've been on, and I don't know why that's the case.
Well, the company I founded called Woodstock Fringe is sort of reinventing itself, and I've been more interested in directing and writing than producing. So the producing part of Woodstock Fringe sort of
tapered off.
And,
yes.
And so I've been very engaged in writing and directing and now acting again, which was my first love. And so it's great to be doing this extraordinary play.
So you're acting in this?
Yes, I'm playing Alan Turing.
You're playing you're the lead in the show.
Yes.
So how is that going?
It's going very, very well. We have a fabulous cast. There are eight members of our cast, and they're all really fine actors, and some of them are veterans from the Woodstock Fringe, and many others are veterans with Performing Arts of Woodstock. So everyone is just very engaged and really supportive of each other and working really, really hard. It's a very challenging play.
Now, are you directing or co-directing or...?
Well, my original involvement was Bob McBroom. We were looking for a way to work with the Performing Arts of Woodstock, and some plays were suggested, and one of the plays that he was suggesting and they were inviting me to direct was Breaking the Code. And when I read the play several times, I said, you know, I think Mr. Turing has my name on it. And I immediately contacted Bette Seiler and said, I would like to do this play, but I've never directed a play I've been in before, and I've never really wanted to. So I said, so will you be my co-director? Which means she's really the director.
So, you know, in all of my reading about the show online, I never knew that you were starring in it. So I love this. This brings a whole new excitement to me over this. When's the last time you've been on stage recently?
Well, a few things in the last few years. But, you know, when I was producing for The Fringe, I occasionally acted with the company. But I was more engaged as a facilitator.
Yep.
You know, this is such a terrific opportunity. It's a very challenging role, and it uses everything that an actor could possibly bring to it. You know, what do? You find interesting challenges, and we hope we do it justice. But
I'm sure you do. So the people may be familiar with the story through the movie; they may have seen the play. But it's a remarkable story. It really is a truly remarkable story.
Oh, it is, and this play was written 30 years ago, and it's a very different point of view about Turing and the Enigma than the film. It's not a conventional play at all. There are 18 scenes in the play, and I realized in the last week or so that it's sort of a bunch of snapshots of different parts and different moments in Alan Turing's life, and so it's really a portrait of a man, and it moves back and forth in time, but does create, I think, a remarkable portrait of a remarkable man in a remarkable time. What seemed to have been happening at the time of the when he was at Bletchley Park, where he worked with his colleagues to break the code, you know, it was a time of extraordinary explosion of ideas and passion in the mathematics and philosophy worlds. It reminded me of what happened in Paris in the 30s, where all the visual artists were hanging out at Gertrude Stein's house, Picasso, Matisse. This explosion of creativity in the field of visual arts, and this was an explosion in the intellectual realm. Wittgenstein and all these remarkable people were doing work that, you know, and I think the fact that they were all at Cambridge and Oxford together at the same time, just, you know, it was a petri dish of to grow these extraordinary ideas, which have changed our lives. There's not a bit of our lives that aren't touched by the work these men and women did.
And for him to really prove to others of what he was doing was correct, and that it would ultimately lead to what it led to, which is breaking the code.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that's fascinating.
Well, it is, and you know, there's a moment in the play where he says that they were struggling because this machine that the Germans made was remarkable. I mean, it looks like an old typewriter, and each of the keys have these rotors behind it. So when you press A, it becomes the letter D, and then the rotor switches, and then the D becomes an H and a P, and the only way to break the code initially was to switch each of these rotors and make a chain of implications from what you could discern from, you know, the date, time, name, and sender, which were the same at the for all the codes. But it took a long, long time. And then one afternoon, this idea came to him that he could use what turns out to be one of the most elementary theorems in mathematical logic to make a machine that could move fast enough. And they were the first people to use electronics to carry out logical operations. It had all been a mechanical process before, and electronics gave them the speed to examine thousands of millions of permutations, which is what they needed to break the code, and that was the only way they were able to do it. But it was his idea that sort of came to him in a flash by some argument, they says in the play, that he was having with a philosopher, Wittgenstein. You know, they were talking about something that they called, the fact that contradictions imply any proposition. This is what these people with this kind of intellect talk about and and understand. But you know, these moments of genius, these sparks, it's sort of the contemporary equivalent of people who rubbed sticks together for the first time and created fire. You know, it was that monumental of an idea.
Going into it, how much did you feel you had to understand of the mathematics of the science, or is it just understanding the guy?
Well, I had a very brief flirtation with abstract math when I was 17 years old, but that didn't last terribly long. The play is
can't
really
can't even imagine
about
how that came up. But okay, go ahead.
Well, I went to school, you know.
Yeah.
And I was interested in it. It was something I had a little bit of a knack for.
All right.
I mean, not on the scale of these geniuses. I mean, I think Turing was, you know, editing and, you know, correcting Einstein's work when he was 20 years old. But the play is all about the man and the humanity of this man and this sort of radiant integrity that he had. He couldn't tell a lie, and he didn't want to live his life as a lie. And it was very common at the time for prominent homosexuals to hide behind a marriage that made their lives possible and manageable. And he couldn't do that. And that's one of the things in the play. There's a scene where he said, "Why didn't you live more conventionally?" And he said he just couldn't.
And it's a, I mean, in that aspect is a tragic story, isn't it? I mean, because not only is there the not being able to live the life that he wants to live and hiding, but then all of this of being committed of a crime, for God's sakes.
Well, the cruelty of it is monumental. I mean, it's just horrible. And it would be true if he were not a hero, if he did not, you know, sort of save the Allies from the German domination. But 41 years old, I mean, think of all that he could have contributed after, you know, in the rest of his life. He was working on morphogenesis, figuring out how things grow when around the time where he was dying. He was mapping growth patterns of plants and animals. You know, there was so much lost by that. But of course, the biggest loss was that a human being was tortured for being a human being.
And that is the chemical castration, which is just horrifying in its in the thought. How is that brought to bear in the play? How do you deal with it?
Well, there's a very very touching scene where he's telling his colleague that, you know, 10 years after he was at Bletchley, he said, I want you to hear what happened, and I want you to hear it from me because I don't want you to hear it secondhand. A woman that he worked with at Bletchley, and they loved each other terribly, but she wanted to marry him, and he said, you know, that wouldn't be right. You know, I wouldn't be able to make love to you, and I don't want that kind of a life, and I don't think you do either. And so later in the play, he tells her that, reveals that they've given him these drugs, and has to do it to stay out of jail, and that he's growing breasts, and the humiliation of saying, well, I keep wondering if I'm going to have to wear a bra, and it's heartbreaking. And
how much do we know? Because there even seems to be history. Some question as to the actual cause of his death, right?
Yes, among the things that I've read, there are people who believe that some government agency may have had a hand in his death. This play is based on the biography that Alan Hodges wrote, a very very comprehensive biography, and this the play takes the point of view that he probably ended his life himself.
Right. Yeah. So how much? I can't even imagine what this takes out of you every night. I mean, I know you're just starting, but
well, we've been working on this
for
many months. It uses everything I have.
Yeah,
and that's a great thing. It's a great opportunity. You know, it's a good exhaustion at the end of the day. But it is a remarkable journey, and I'm.
How many others are in the cast?
We're eight.
Okay.
We're a cast of eight, and
but you're there pretty much the whole time.
Well, there are 18 scenes in the play, and my character's in 17 of them.
Yeah. So that's a. Are you good to yourself, the director, or do you take direction from yourself well?
Well, fortunately, I have Bette Seiler to direct me, and she's. She's a great artist, so I'm just blessed to have her offer suggestions and guide me and we're very simpatico, so it's a great collaboration. But it really is an ensemble effort. I think of us very much as an ensemble play.
Well, the name of the show is Breaking the Code. It is playing for 3 weeks, November 3rd through the 19th at the Meskel Hornbeck Community Center in Woodstock, New York. It's being staged by Performing Arts of Woodstock for the three-week run. If you still go to woodstockfringe.org, there's information all about the show there, woodstockfringe.org, and you can find out more information. We'll have a link to the show on our website as well, which is wamc.org/roundtable. Wallace Norman is starring as Alan Turing. He is co-directing the show with Bette Seiler. Wallace, you've been on the program, I think, since the very beginning. We love having you here. It's a delight that you're back. I have a blast when I'm on the air with you, and I hope you'll come back very, very soon and talk to us again.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
I look forward to it. Thank you. Again, find out more about Breaking the Code, woodstockfringe.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.